bought some rice for decoration.
Hi, my name is Pablo, and this is the Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo the Don. I'm still looking for more people to do the intros and outros, so please send your voice notes that say the Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo the Don to at Back Catalog, CATALOG pod on Instagram. I feel like I say this every single week, but this week is actually a super special week because today is my 25th birthday. I'm a Cancer sun, Leo moon, and a Leo rising, so that literally explains why I have a podcast where you only hear me speak, because it's all about me. No, but seriously, I'm so grateful to be here and to have made it to 25 because, child, there were some real moments where I was so unsure of what life was going to bring me. But we're here, and since we're in a celebratory mood, I wanted to take a journey through the life of Pablo and tell y'all some of the most impactful songs and albums on my life that also made me the person who I am today and the person that y'all have given this platform to. Now, to preface this, the most impactful music on my life isn't necessarily my favorite music. It is the music that made me listen to it in a different way and opened me up to new genres and worlds. But I do like all of this music and still listen to it regularly. Also, this isn't a full comprehensive list of the music, so if you enjoy this episode, maybe I'll do a part two. Obviously, there's going to be a Spotify and Apple Music playlist linked in the description box of this podcast, so please check it out if you like it, and follow me on Spotify and Apple Music to keep up with all my listening and all the playlists that I make. Anyways, I hope you enjoy some of these personal stories and this honestly rare peek into my life. So, for those of you who don't know, my name actually isn't Pablo. I was actually born on July 16th, 1996 in Palm Beach, Florida. And when I was born, my parents were involved in a Pentecostal church, which really just means very Southern, very Black, and very restrictive. When they had me, they were just members of this church, but they would both go on to be pastors and evangelists. My life was super sheltered, and my parents only allowed me to consume music they had already approved of. What they mainly approved of was gospel music, Christian music, yes, there is a difference, and carefully selected R&B and hip-hop that was popular before I was born. My mom always knew all the good music, no matter what genre it was, so I have to thank her for only allowing me to listen to the best of the best when I was younger. I truly think that's where my ear for music began to develop. But the first album I ever recalled hearing was CeCe Winans' 1995 album, Alone in His Presence. My mom has always been an avid prayer, and she would wake up at 4 a.m. every morning and pray until it was time to get ready for work. And this was about the only CD she would play every single day. I would literally call it The Lady in the Yellow Chair because CeCe's sitting on like this yellow chair on the cover of the album. The entire album was dedicated to learning how to pray and praying by yourself. And so it was filled with a lot of soft and ambient music combined with CeCe's incredibly tender but strong vocals. To this day, I think it's one of my mom's favorite albums ever. And being introduced to such incredible vocals at such a young age kind of skewed my ear for music for a while, but alas, I know an incredible voice when I hear one. As I continued to grow up, my mom would make us clean every Saturday. We'd get up around 7 and she would always put on a plethora of CDs. And a few I will certainly mention here, but the first song she would always put on was Revolution by Kirk Franklin. But now by this time, Kirk Franklin had already shook up the gospel world by releasing the song Stomp in 1997 when I was 1. But the next year, he linked up with Rodney Darkchild Jerkins to create arguably the most anti-gospel gospel song ever created. When I heard this song, I knew there was something special about music. I knew that music could make you feel things that were almost indescribable. And from the first beat and record scratch, this song made me feel something that could only be described as pure bliss. Looking back now, I realized that music could sound fun, but also cover some taboo topics as well. I mean, this song was literally a critique of the church and society as a whole as we move closer to the world ending. After that, she would continue playing gospels, one of my favorites being Fred Hammond's We're Blessed, which to this day I listen to when I'm feeling incredibly overwhelmed by the love and support that you all give me. That song really grounds me and reminds me that no matter what happens in life, I am still blessed. Not to mention, it really has one of the funkiest bass lines I've ever heard. But I'd say that the biggest impact that cleaning every Saturday had on me, besides attempting to keep tidy spaces, is my introduction to my favorite person ever, Miss Lauryn Hill. My mom would literally wear the fuck out of that Miss Education CD. You could have swore that she was actually going through heartbreak despite being married with four kids. Looking back on it now, that was probably the heartbreak for her, to be honest. But that album is still one that I listen to every single day, specifically her collaborations with D'Angelo called Nothing Even Matters. What that album did and still does for me is nothing I could put into words. I just feel good listening to it, and I don't think it's even from a point of nostalgia. It's really just from a point of, wow, this is such good music, and I'm in complete and utter shock knowing that someone can make something that was that perfect. As time progressed, my parents still didn't really let me listen to secular music, which to this day, I'm really not sure how they achieved. You see, I have three older siblings, and when I say older, I mean way older, and I know they were into rap heavy during the late 90s and early 2000s. They were all in middle school by then, but my parents had me specifically under lock and key. They enrolled me in a private Christian school, but soon realized that I would need something to entertain myself. So they expanded my horizons just a little bit. I remember my mom bought me this random CD from her favorite Christian bookstore called The Inspiration House. And it was a CD with five white kids jumping in the air. It seems interesting, so I popped it in and I instantly fell in love. The group was named Jump 5, conveniently, and they blurred the line between Christian and secular music. But their first album was an introduction to what I'd call the 2000s American Christian version of S Club 7. Jump 5 did this thing where they made music that could be applied to God, but also puppy love. I mean, listen to these lyrics. Spinning around, I got this funny feeling, turning my whole world upside down. I'll keep my heart and my eyes on you. Like, for real, who was that about? Like, was that about Jesus or was that about Johnny down the street? Regardless of all of that, I was hooked. The borderline Euro club sound with crazy auto-tune and some busy beats had me in a tailspin, okay? Had me by the neck. And I think I recommended that CD to every person I ever knew at my Christian school. To this day, I own every single Jump 5 album that ever existed, and I keep them in a safe place as a memento to the time that my parents hated secular music so much that they introduced me to five random white children who would do handless cartwheels. Like I said, my parents began to expand my horizons slowly but surely and in the most controlled way possible. So my mom started buying me hit clips. Hit clips were those 30-second snippets of popular songs that were the size of your palm, and you would collect a bunch of the little cartridges and pop them into the player. And there were two types of players. One was the boombox, and the other was supposed to resemble like a CD player or a Walkman with only one headphone. And that's the one that I had. My mom bought me Aaron Carter's Aaron Party, Backstreet Boys' Show Me the Meaning of Feeling Lonely, but there were three in particular that I refused to stop playing on the loop. The first was NSYNC's No Strings Attached, and this one snippet introduced me to the five-part harmony that to this day I'm still a sucker for. This jump-started my obsession with teeny bopper music, but two women would solidify my position, and I am the CEO of early 2000s nostalgia. Christina Aguilera's What a Girl Wants was actually the hit clip I ended up breaking. I couldn't formulate the words then, but it was the way that Christina was able to capture music purists and teenagers who just wanted to have a good time at the same time. And even though she would go on to overtan and wear braids like the cultural appropriator most girls in the 2000s were, nothing could stop me from eating Sis and her music right the fuck up at the time. I mean, the breakdown on the bridge of What a Girl Wants is pop perfection, and it won't be the last time I use this phrase in this episode. The other clip was obviously One More Time by Britney Spears, but my obsession with that song got me in front of the TV to watch TRL every day by the time I was five. And my mom would literally only let me watch Britney, Christina, or the Boy Bands videos every single day. While I was getting into this side of music, another love of mine was brewing from the inside, and I didn't know how much this one thing would affect my life until I became an adult. As I mentioned earlier, I have older siblings, all of whom are boys, and of course they love sports, but the thing they loved most was wrestling and Space Jam. The Space Jam videotape got played every day from when I was born until I was probably 4 or 5, according to my mom. And we all know how iconic that soundtrack was and is. And there's nothing more perfect and special to me than knowing that the new version of the movie is releasing on my 25th birthday. It's really like a full circle moment, but honestly, that's not nearly as important as wrestling is to me. I'm unashamed to say that even today, at my big age, I still watch wrestling. And yes, I know it's scripted, but for me, wrestling combines the greatest aspects of entertainment into one: storytelling and physicality. And all that started for me in the late 90s and early 2000s, watching Attitude Era WWE. And to be honest, my parents mostly sheltered me from Sable being topless or the bra and panties matches. And I was too young to know that Stone Cold was flipping the bird or what "give me a hell yeah" meant. I was really just there to watch The Rock lambast someone and then say his infamous catchphrase. But what I'm realizing as I'm getting older is that the music had the biggest impact on me. What Jim Johnston, the guy who created most of the themes, and the other musicians were doing was giving me an earmarker for escapism. I'd hear the glass shatter and I immediately knew that it was time to watch Steve Austin open up a can of whoop ass and then take a beer bath. There isn't much music that moves me to tears, and I'm really sorry for being emotional at this point, but every time I hear Metalingus by Alter Bridge, my favorite wrestler ever, Edge's theme song, I start crying. I really don't know why, other than that music reminds me of my youth and how that entire world provided me somewhere else to go. And no, that doesn't mean my life was rough. It was just another world for me to enter that was outside of my normal life. Some of my favorite intros then and still are The Godfather, who was literally a pimp, that had this crazy voodoo child Jimi Hendrix-esque guitar intro, Scotty Too Hottie, Grandmaster Sexay, and Rikishi's Turn It Up intro, which would literally lead to a fat man in a thong dancing. And maybe one of my favorite songs ever is Lil' Kim doing Trish Stratus's intro music. If you throw in Michelle McCool, who is a super underrated wrestler who deserves way more recognition than she's ever gotten, "You're Not Enough for Me," you will literally see me in fetal position thinking about all the suplexes, F5s, and choke slams my brothers would give me when we were younger. I know people hate wrestling, but seriously, just let people have it, because you don't know what that world provides people. So as I continued to grow up, my parents loosened the reins a little bit, except for that one time when Nelly's Tip Drill video on BET Uncut got all MTV, BET, and VH1 channels banned for 2 years in our house. But by the time I was in second grade, it was time for me to meet the queen. Now, yes, I had clearly heard of Destiny's Child before this moment, but my second grade year was when Beyonce released Dangerously in Love. And I, too, was dangerously in love. I owned the CD, and though everyone else was booty popping, because that's what we called it before twerking, to Crazy in Love, I was listening to the vocal layering on Me, Myself, and I, and Dangerously in Love, while simultaneously trying to roll my hips to Baby Boy. It was truly such a dark time, but I was fitting in, okay? I was trying to fit in. After studying Beyonce's hip movements for a while, my parents decided to do the unspeakable. Put me in a summer camp with a lot of white kids in 2004. And what came of that was my introduction into two new worlds of music. The first was pop punk and rock, with everyone at that camp being obsessed with Green Day's American Idiot at the time. Wake Me Up When September Ends was the first song I ever learned how to play on guitar. And this is where my obsession with almost every genre really began. I would go home every day after camp, stick my iPod shuffle into the computer, open up LimeWire and download all the songs that the white kids were talking about just so I could listen and have something to talk about the next day. And mom and dad, if you're listening, I am really sorry. I know I destroyed like 3 or 4 computers and I used to blame it on everyone else, but it was probably me. I apologize. And this is how I found bands like The Strokes, Blur, The Gorillaz, and of course The White Stripes. I became obsessed with rock and pop punk and made it a point to let everyone know that Blink-182 and Sum 41 were the pinnacle of greatness. Now please give me some grace. I was 9 at the time and my views have changed, okay? The other world that this camp got me into was watching TV at an alarming rate. I started watching all the little teen drama shows with my mom, our favorite being One Tree Hill. That show expanded my love for pop punk and coffee house even more. That's how I found Gavin DeGraw, who conveniently provided the theme song for the show, and he led me to Michelle Branch and Jason Mraz. And if you've seen my TikTok, you know I described them as white people who went to a black church one time and then fused praise and worship time with coffee house rock. Those artists would help me unwind from the day. And during this time as well, my mom and I would make it a point to go to movies and explore different genres. One time, she took me to see a movie about a girl who grew up overnight, and it was called 13 Going on 30. That movie had an amazing soundtrack, but one song that stood out to me was Vienna by Billy Joel. The song is about not being in a rush to grow up and realizing that old age is waiting for all of us. And so you should enjoy life as it unfolds. This song still holds a really special place in my heart, and it reminds me to stay in the moment even when I want to look back or dream too far ahead. This song is the reason why I manifest things in the present and not for the future, because I'm trying to achieve my goals now, not in 20 years. As I get to middle school, my life is pretty much an amalgamation of music, except I was missing a lot of rap music. My parents tried their hardest to keep me away from most of the 2000s rap because they felt it glorified sex, drugs, and partying too much for me. And truthfully, to this day, I think that's why rap is probably the genre I reference most sparingly, in addition to the amount of annoying-ass cishet men who are misogynistic about the genre. Y'all seriously kill it for me. I hate y'all, and that's why I don't really comment on too much hip-hop stuff. But that all changed in 2007 when I heard my brother, who had just graduated high school, listening to this album. Or actually, it was like a free mixtape. When the beat dropped, it was Beyonce's Upgrade You, and I definitely knew that. But I heard this nasally man get on this Beyonce track and say, "Bitch, holla, it's Lil Weezy." And that's how I got introduced into Lil Wayne. Now, of course, I'd heard the name before, but again, listening was a big no-no in my house. So what I would do was sneak into my brother's room after school and play the CD, because of course he'd burnt it illegally so he could listen to it in his car. I would then go back and listen to every Wayne project that had come out, and it was honestly right on time, because the man was literally about to take the industry by storm at that time. After that mixtape came out, the Carter 3 came out the next year in 2008, and that's when he sold 1 million in a week and took the industry by storm for like the next 3 years straight. While I was surely enamored by Wayne, it was important for me to also learn music history from before I was born. And my parents had finally unblocked MTV, VH1, and BET, and this allowed me to do just that. VH1 would have all these music countdowns that would recant the biggest songs from each decade, and the one I loved the most was the 90s. I would watch the 5-episode series hundreds of times over the years and get to the point where every single song was on my iPod. This is how I got into the Spin Doctors, Blues Traveler, and Ace of Base, but this show gave me two things specifically. First, a deep love for 90s R&B. This show introduced me to SWV, Escape, Jade, and Jodeci, and early stylings of Missy Timbaland and Magoo, who would all go on to be some of my favorite producers. But also, it gave me Aaliyah, TLC, and Usher. I developed a deep love for the genre, but specifically one song, Tamia's So Into You, the original version, of course. I discovered Tamia as I was getting into Brandy and heard the song I'm Missing You. Tamia's voice stood out instantly, and I asked my mom about her. That's when she pulled out the self-titled CD that had So Into You on it. It was the second track in, and I listened to it in awe. Even though at that point I had never experienced love, that song made me feel like I knew exactly what she was talking about. And to this day, that song is my favorite song of all time. It will never change from that. during this time, there was plenty of pop music in my life. The Black Eyed Peas, Gwen Stefani, and Nelly Furtado were all blowing up the airwaves. And at this point, my parents were pretty much allowing me to listen to whatever I wanted to. But it was in 2008 when I had my first musical gay reckoning. I know this is going to be cliche, but when I heard the first beat to Katy Perry's I Kissed a Girl, I knew it was special. I was at my friend's 8th grade graduation party and the song came on. At the time, I was just bobbing my head to it aimlessly, but thinking about it now, it was the first time I had heard anything overtly gay in music. I'm not saying this song pulled me to experiment or try anything, but it definitely made me think about what being gay meant more than what I'd been taught in church. And even though the album You're So Gay and the title song to the album is riddled by phobia, I Kissed a Girl is something I look back on fondly, because seeing some sort of gay overtures talked about so loudly and publicly was really cool to experience. I won't say high school was a blur, but I will say I was just always super busy with playing basketball and working out. So most of the music that I was listening to was all rap, and it was mainly throwbacks. But during this time, to hype myself up, I'd usually listen to 3-6 Mafia's 2005 Most Unknown album. That album hyped me up for every single game, and it introduced me to Memphis rap and the impact it had on music all the way up until today. Now, if you know me, you know that I love R&B, but I really fell off from my love of current trends in the genre for a while until I got to college and heard about the internet. Ego Death is the album that changed the way I interacted with R&B music. I felt like that album opened my eyes to a world that was more alternative in nature, and because of that album, I discovered Phony People, Ravina, Georgia Smith, and so many other artists that are part of my daily listening now. Ego Death was the current version of the music my parents introduced me to, like Sly and the Family Stone and Funkadelic, mixed with more current trends and social media language. That album also sparked my interest in what is now a lifelong passion of collecting vinyl records. Listening to that vinyl on my ex's rinky-dink ass Crosley made me realize I love listening to music in an analog form more than anything else. The last few years of my life have introduced me to my love of trap music, especially once Future came around, hyperpop with Charlie XCX and Sophie, alternative rap with artists like Injury Reserve, Def Grips, and JPEG Mafia, and convinced me to check out more artists from before my time, like Kate Bush, the Bee Gees, and Otis Redding. My entire life has somehow been intertwined with music, and now it's the one thing I get to talk about daily. While I wish my parents would have loosened the reins in some regards with my childhood in terms of music, I feel like what they did was carefully repel me down the edge of a cliff, allowing me to stop and deeply explore genres that would pique my interest and then move along whenever I was ready to explore something new. I'm still nowhere near the bottom of that cliff, but this was a solid start. Obviously, I haven't told y'all every single song that influenced my life, so if you want part two to this, blow up the back catalog Instagram and let me know. Before I go, I wanted to just say thank you so much for giving me a platform and allowing me to talk about the one thing I love the most in life, which is music and how it makes me and other people feel. And thank y'all for listening to this episode and supporting me the way that you do and putting me onto new genres like y'all do. So make sure you follow me on Instagram at Pablo.thedon. Follow me on TikTok, Pablo the Don, all one word. Make sure you follow the Back Catalog page at Back Catalog, CATALOG pod. Make sure you leave us a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. Thank you guys so much for joining me. Remember to send your voice notes to the Back Catalog Instagram page if you want to be included in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. This is the Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo the Don.
Look what your mind's imagination can more back if you can't hold it. Life is but a dream that you manifest it slowly. Forget a fantasy, baby, this right in your moment.